The next case is 96-2642, Fort Frye Teachers Association versus the State Employment Relations Board. Mr. Thomas.
May it please the Court, Peter Thomas from the Office of the Ohio Attorney General, here today on behalf of my client, State Employment Relations Board. I'll be sharing my time this morning with Councilman Co-Appellant, Fort Frye Local School District Board of Education. Councilman will be addressing the issues of the specific elements of collateral stop of the state, as well as applying to the debt of these properties. The question for this Court to decide, Your Honor, is whether service jurisdiction to decide unfair labor practices under 41.17 of the Ohio Code is exclusive or shared. If the decision of the Fourth District Court of Appeal is upheld, the result is that service jurisdiction is no longer exclusive, rather shared with a federal jurisdiction. The Fourth District stated, our review of the collateral estoppel issue does not infringe upon service jurisdiction to determine the ultimate issue in this case, that is, whether the Board of Education's non-renewal constitutes an unfair labor practice. Based upon the judgment of federal proceeding, that is, that Mr. Rouse's First Amendment rights were, which exist independently of Chapter 417, violated, we merely hold that the Board of Education may not relitigate the factual issue of its motivation for non-renewal.
Sir, Counsel, let's pile on the facts here. Let's assume there were interrogatories that went to the jury that squarely set forth the same precise language issue that CERB has to address. Because it the flavor I get from your briefs is that, well, it was a federal constitutional issue, and that's not necessarily the same as what CERB is addressing. But let's say an interrogatory was answered to the jury. Was the plaintiff fired because of anti-union animus? And that's answered in the affirmative as part of the overall verdict. Would that not be, at that point, binding at all? Is CERB free to ignore everything that went on in the federal court?
Your Honor, as you indicated, that certainly not what we have in this case, and I understand that. Your hypothetical being, my client's position is, even if the federal jury had come out with an interrogatory that said, not only do we find that Mr. Rouse's First Amendment rights were violated, we also find that his rights under 4117 were violated, my client's position would be the same. That judgment has no binding precedent in the state of Ohio.
I thought that's what your argument was, sir.
That's it, precisely, Your Honor. CERB is the body of administrative law in this state that was vested by the General Assembly with authority to determine unfair practices, not a court of common pleas and not a federal court.
Well, to say that the particular issue under Brown v. Hartman was previously determined and therefore there's only collateral estoppel with respect to the issue, do you claim that if the issue of, well, I guess your point is that the ultimate issue that served.
That's it exactly, Your Honor. The ultimate issue,
motivation,
as stated by this court in Adena, is the central question to be decided by CERB in an unfair labor practice proceeding is motivation. And in this, if this decision stands, we're going to take a decision by a federal court jury on motivation to violate the First Amendment and impose it on CERB. This is not a case where we have a clear record of what evidence the jury considered, what jury instructions the jury was given. We have nothing but a conclusion, a general jury verdict. Motivation must have been improper because we, the jury, find in favor of the plaintiff.
What supports the notion that we should treat CERB and its jurisdiction differently than we would treat other tribunals in terms of the application of the doctrine of issue preclusion? Why should issue preclusion not work even on the ultimate issue?
Simply stated, Your Honor, based on what this court's previously decided, it is exclusive jurisdiction. It is the intent of the General Assembly that there be one body providing uniform construction of this chapter. It is not up to the courts of common pleas, the gating, different towns to decide what the issue was a non-variable practice. If the General Assembly intended for CERB to have exclusive jurisdiction, as this court has construed, it cannot impose collateral estoppel on the ultimate issue, motivation. And especially with regard, Your Honor, with the record for this individual. This court previously acknowledged that there will be, is anticipated there will be multiple litigations in this area in the Rankin County law enforcement versus the FOP. This court indicated that rights independent of 4117 may proceed in courts of common pleas or other venues. In a particular case referencing constitutional rights, which are independent of 4117, may proceed concurrently or not with CERB proceeding. But there is no intent ever expressed by this court, nor by the General Assembly, that CERB should be prevented from addressing the ultimate issue, motivation and discrimination. There are no public policy arguments that point in favor of applying collateral estoppel in this case. Finality of judgments. CERB is deciding a very different issue from what's decided by the First Amendment decision in federal court. Judicial economy, again, the General Assembly understood when they created CERB.
What was that issue? I mean, the Court of Appeals said there is issue.
The Court of Appeals stated, based on the finding of the First Amendment violation, we hold that the Board of Education may not relitigate the factual issue of its motivation for non-renewing Mr. Rouse's conduct. Nowhere in the Court of Appeals opinion does it ever indicate that Chapter 4117 was addressed by the federal jury. In fact, there are statements in that opinion which state that they acknowledge that it was a First Amendment issue. And certainly the First Amendment encompasses a very much broader scope of rights than this Chapter 4117. So there is CERB deciding the issue has been reserved to it on the violation of Chapter 4117. CERB is not saying the federal jury verdict is incomplete. CERB is not trying to overturn the federal jury verdict. There can be a violation of First Amendment rights and not be a violation of Chapter 4117.
Practically speaking, this teacher was reinstated with back pay under the federal, or there was just damage?
There's just damage for a war time. So there is no chance of inconsistency. If CERB were to determine, as they had in the previous order, so it wasn't a violation.
Are you coming near to the end of your argument on the major part of your argument?
Yes.
Your appeal? Okay. Are you then yet ready to go to the cross appeal on the in part test?
The general thrust of the cross appeal will be addressed by Mr. Compton. There are specific questions with regards to CERB and the cross appeal. I would be happy to address those for you.
No, I'll wait until we hear it, but I just didn't want the time to get away and have them argue and you not have a chance to argue the in part test.
Thank you for that, Your Honor. I'll see you the rest of my time, Mr. Compton.
Thank you, Mr. Thomas. Mr. Compton.
Thank you, Mr. Chief Justice. Justices. The Fort Fry Local School District Board of Education joined in the argument that just presented to you on the exclusivity of CERB's jurisdiction to make the determination of actual motivation. My purpose in my argument is to address the specifics of this case and what the Court of Appeals held. That the factual issue of motivation has been determined by the jury. through the record that preceded this action and was developed in CERB, there is a large amount of evidence. It took 5 days of hearing before a hearing officer in CERB. There are allegations that are divergent as far as what was the motivation of the Board of Education. It was strike activity, a protected activity under 4117. There was activity post-strike, which the plaintiff, Mr. Rao, indicated was a freedom of expression, although CERB never found, and in fact disregarded the finding of it being a protected activity under 4117. We have two competing factual scenarios. You look at the jury verdict. I don't know what the jury decided upon, and I trust that the court doesn't know either. The reason I point that out is that the complaint that was filed in the federal court indicated that there was a violation of First Amendment freedom of speech, freedom of association rights. There certainly were allegations about strike activity, but also the motivation by the board as expressed in its non-renewal, centered around post-strike activity. In the issue of collateral estoppel being judicially created, there are four primary elements. One of the elements is that the issues decided is in fact the same issue in the subsequent case. Again, the jury verdict, which the Court of Appeals based its holding on, does not lend any assistance to determine what in fact are the factual basis that the jury rendered a decision. CERB has certainly articulated that in his opinion, and that is the opinion that went back to CERB to apply the ADINA test after this court issued ADINA. After ADINA was issued, CERB after supplemental briefs, at that point in time, the union, as well as Mr. Rao, submitted the information from the federal case, and at that point in time, collateral estoppel was asserted as an issue by Mr. Rao and specifically the Fort Bright Teachers Association. As far as the cross appeal, Your Honor, the appellant, the appellee, has asked.
Counsel, I'm a little lost. I thought I picked up in your brief an argument that you didn't even want to refer to the federal action. You wanted to treat it as if it never happened. Did I misread that?
You did not misread that, Your Honor. Part of the brief asserts that CERB was on remand taking facts already determined in July of 1991 and applying it to the 1993 decision of this court in Adena. There were no additional facts to be found. They had already found their facts in July of 91.
Okay, so at least CERB had some record to look at, and therefore the Court of Appeals had some record of what went on in the federal court case to look at. I've gotten the drift that it was, the record was devoid of that.
Your Honor,
reference to it.
Your Honor, in the remand to CERB, for the first time, there was appended to the brief filed by the Teachers Association reference to the federal action, also reference to the fact that a jury verdict had been rendered. That is appended to a brief. There is no evidence in this particular record of this unfair labor practice as to what, in fact, were the issues submitted to the jury at that point in time. I agree with Your Honor that had there been interrogatories specifically asked of the jury, we would have better insight on what the jury decided, but we don't have that. As far as I know, that doesn't exist. I submit that it does not exist in this court. As far as the cross appeal goes, the cross appellant would like to stand. This court rendered a decision, Your Honor. I have been with this case for 10 years now. I assure you that everyone would like to have finality. However, there are certain procedures to be followed. The Court of Appeals chose to decide that the issue was moot. I suggest it is not under Appellate Rule 12. The Court of Appeals must decide all issues unless there is a mootness. It did not. I suggest to the court that the appropriate remedy is to reverse the Court of Appeals decision because collateral estoppel does not apply in this situation. The elements of collateral estoppel were not met, that this matter should go back to the Court of Appeals to review CERB decision and the Common Pleas Court of Washington County's decision on that appeal.
But that would only be reversing on the cross appeal. That's what you want us to do?
Affirm
on the appeal and reverse on the cross appeal.
We would ask you to affirm, to reverse the Court of Appeals decision. It gets a little complicated, Your Honor.
It really doesn't from what you just said. You just said we think you ought to reverse the Court of Appeals, and you're arguing the cross appeal. And if we reverse on the cross appeal, then we send it back for the application of the Adena test.
That is correct.
You don't know you want that, do you?
Your Honor, what I want is that the appeal that we filed, that the decision that we filed the appeal, be reversed.
Okay, but you are arguing the cross appeal in your last 2 minutes.
I am opposed to the cross appeal, Your Honor. And in opposition to the cross appeal, I do not believe that this court should reverse the Court of Appeals insofar as its decision, not to render a decision. The cross appellant is asking this court to render the decision that really the Court of Appeals wants.
I understand. I understand the procedure perfectly. But you said it's unimportant. But you were arguing the cross appeal. You said, I think it ought to reverse and go back to the Court of Appeals to determine that issue because it isn't moot, and that would be only on the issue of the Adena test.
Assuming the cross the collateral estoppel decision is reversed, Your Honor, yes, sir, it should go back.
Okay, but just to clarify, if we were to affirm on the collateral estoppel issue, then we really don't have to address your cross appeal.
If we follow the natural results of the Court of Appeals decision, if you affirm on the collateral estoppel, it then goes back to the State Employment Relations Board. And then from there, it goes through the various stages of the procedures. And you may see this court again before you. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr. Compton. Mr. Foley.
Let me clarify. There were no jury instructions that were submitted to the let me briefly touch on the issue of jurisdiction, which I think is essentially we're here on that issue, on the issue of exclusion, the court's well aware of the tests and how they apply. And it seems like the times that people argue against collateral estoppel or issue preclusion is when they lose. Then they don't want to apply. In this case, because the Board of Education lost in the Court of Appeals, in the federal court, they don't want to apply.
But this case does have implications far beyond the facts in the case, does it not? If we're determining the jurisdiction of CERB, then it's a major issue, is it not, beyond the facts of the case? Would you agree?
I'm not sure if I understand your question. I think that where you apply collateral estoppel or issue preclusion in regards to the issue of motivation that was determined in the federal court case, all you are doing is saying that certain facts have been established. Now, if you look at the Adena case, this court upheld what the trial court did there, where it found facts at the level of the trial court that served and not addressed. And this court said that that was permissible and that was not an intrusion upon CERB's exclusive jurisdiction or right to determine the unfair labor practice. If you recall in that case, Adena, at CERB, there were deemed admitted facts because there was not an answer that had been filed timely. And that part of it was overturned by the trial level court. And then the trial court looked at the record and made determinations as far as the facts. This court said that was proper. Likewise, when you're talking about facts that CERB must concede as being there, this happens any time a defendant files an answer to CERB and admits facts. Any time there are stipulations of facts, such as there were in this case. Any time you have those deemed admissions of facts that apply to CSRS. At that point in time, all you do is you have certain facts that the parties have agreed upon, and then CSRS deals with those facts. That's all that occurs here. That doesn't divest the jurisdiction of CSRS any more than an answer that admits paragraph 1, 2, 3 with the rest of jurisdiction.
Well, it's because it's a proceeding in CSRS.
Even if it's not,
I mean, that wouldn't divest them of jurisdiction if they're doing that pursuant to something that's been filed in CERB, I wouldn't
think. They're not doing it because the parties have said these are the facts, and then CERB are stepping them. In that situation, CERB is not determining those facts. They're not looking at the evidence on it. The same way as regards, I'm sure you can look at the probate court that has exclusive jurisdiction of certain matters. Nonetheless, collateral estoppel would apply there. Certainly, to have facts determined in another matter does not take away the jurisdiction of that court. That's an entirely separate issue.
One of the parties alleges that if we let this ruling stand, that there's going to be a race to the courthouse. We don't think you're going to be very successful under maybe some CERB prior ruling to be raced to a state or a federal court and try to get a separate determination on an underlying fact, and then you take those to CERB and get any, and you're stuck with them.
Well, I guess there's always, you always run into those issues in collateral estoppel because obviously people are litigating in two or three or whatever, they're in separate forums. There has been no indication in this case that there was a race or rush, and I don't see that happening as a practical matter, frankly. I don't think the issue of collateral estoppel will occur that often. In regards to CERB. But when it occurs, nonetheless, it is a legal determination, as the Court of Appeals pointed out, and it's just applying those legal principles determined by this court and other courts in the country, and for the reasons that justify the use of collateral stuff.
Under your scenario, could this jury verdict then go to CERB? And as I understand how you phrased it, CERB has to take the factual issues that have been litigated and then apply to determine whether there's an unrelated fact.
Correct. They have to take the issue of motivation that, in fact, in this case, as determined by the federal court, and I want to address that because the federal court had to determine that the Board of Education was motivated by an anti-union animus. They had to determine.
CERB look at those facts. They aren't clear enough. They aren't really determinate enough. They don't really apply.
Well,
in disregard of them.
You don't need to know the particular facts because you are precluding an issue, and that issue is the motivation. What were the underlying facts that resulted in that?
If you accept your interpretation of what that verdict meant, but this is not crystal clear what the verdict meant. The verdict said, you know, he's violated the free speech rights of this teacher, but
well,
to make the next jump is a little more iffy in this case.
I disagree with you, and for example, the Board of Education took issue with our statement that this was a unanimous jury verdict. How do you know that? Well, Rule 47, the federal rule, says that you have to have a unanimous verdict. You have a verdict, therefore it was unanimous. Therefore it has been proven. That's elementary logic. The same sort of thing as regards to motivation. What is the standard that is applied? It's the Doyle standard. Doyle versus Mount Healthy. This court is familiar with. And you lay the Doyle standard up against the Adena standard, and you find out that first you have to prove that there was a person who engaged in protected activity and that there was adverse action taken against him because of that. That's same in both of them. And in fact, in the Doyle standard, you have to prove that it was a substantial, significant factor in that. So that was determined, you know that, by the jury verdict and by the judgment NOV. The other thing you know is you look at the complaint. What were the factual allegations of the federal court complaint? They were all related to union activity around the strike, which are the same facts that were alleged in the complaint and in the unfair labor practice as served. So you know that. Then you look at the judgment NOV as determined by the judge, and she also pointed out in her decision that there had been raised the good faith immunity defense, and that was rejected. And so that was determined that, in fact, in this case, where the facts were the union activity related to the strike, that the Board of Education knew of a constitutional right, knew it was being violated, and they did not have good faith immunity as individual defendants.
That's really your cross appeal.
Well,
in part.
I guess in part.
Let me ask you that. Before you go to that, let me just ask you, because I want to make sure the procedure is straight. Is it accurate to say that if we reverse the Court of Appeals in this case, not the propositional law of appellant, that then you feel we need to go to the cross appeal and look at maybe a second reason that the Court of Appeals had before it? Let me finish. Conversely, if we affirm the Court of Appeals, we don't really have to reach your cross appeal, do we?
I believe that's correct, Your Honor. If you affirm, you would not have to. I would like to see the court still go ahead and rule on that. And the reason I do is because this is an important issue that is out there. And frankly, I think it will have some impact upon his remand served.
Can we do that without a Court of Appeals judgment on it?
I think you can. I think you have the power of the Supreme Court to make that decision. Even though, although it was determined as moot by the court, I think that the facts are sufficient.
And we do that by accepting the federal. We do that by accepting the federal pleadings and jury verdict.
No. That once you apply collateral estoppel,
that's gone.
That issue on motivation is there. Then the next question is the common pleas court's decision that said, and I want to point out, everybody agrees that this teacher was a fine teacher. There were no deficiencies whatsoever. If the superintendent had made a recommendation on him before the strike, he would have been back. And there are no blemishes that you will find anywhere on his record. So that's the type of teacher that we have. Now, the Common Pleas Court has looked at this case twice. They first looked at it, and she looked at it. And there, once we proved at CERB, as we did in the federal court, that there was a prima facie case and that there was discrimination on the basis of union activity. Then the board put forth justification, business justification, other things that they said nonetheless, and once again, you look at the Doyle standard, if they proved that they would have taken the same position, even if they didn't know about what was going on, then they could justify it for business reasons. And they listed 9 reasons as to why they felt justified. The Complaints Court looked at that and found support for only one, and the others were not supported on the record. The Complaints Court, and this is on the first time to the trial court, as regards that one, there was an incident, an allegation that Mr. Rao had a confrontation with a substitute teacher when he went through his classroom. There were 3 people who testified as regards that. Mr. Rao indicated that the allegations regards him calling him scab or whatever it was and shaking his fist didn't occur. The substitute teacher testified, and there were some issues on cross-examination as regards his motivation and that sort of thing. He essentially testified that it occurred. There was an independent third person student who was in the classroom when that happened. Categorically, without question, said it did not happen. So that's the one incident that withstood and formed a basis. Now,
Mr. Foley, I do want to get you back to the legal issue. I assume you would agree that if the federal court action here had gone against your client, that the collateral estoppel would apply against your client.
A mutuality issue?
Yeah. You wouldn't want the right to go back, to go into CERB and try to prove motivation there because you don't, not sure exactly what the jury...
I think what's good for the goose is good for the gander.
That's a good answer.
So, in regards to the rush to the courthouse that Justice Stratton is asking about, there certainly would be a risk in such a rush.
Okay, counsel, I'm also interested in following up on the line of questioning, Justice Stratton. If CERB had taken a different approach, or I think it's different from what they took, and said, okay, we agree preemption would apply if that's what the jury was determining, took a look at it and said, we've looked at this and concluded not at all, but, you know, that isn't the issue that was before them, anti-union animus. That's something they would like to do, and then that becomes a part of the appeal to the trial court, doesn't it?
Your Honor, that is true, and in fact, CERB, when they looked at it, when we raised the collateral estoppel, said that the same issue was, in fact, before them that was in the federal court case. And that was not contested, although counsel for the Board of Education...
So you don't dispute their right to at least examine whether or not the federal court case...
Certainly. Just as the Court of Appeals looked at it and said it was the same issue, and therefore collateral estoppel.
The problem here was CERB didn't even...
CERB looked at it and said, yes, there is the same issue, but we are not going to apply collateral estoppel because the federal court was looking at it in the context of a constitutional question, whereas we look at it under the Adena, is this a ULP? As I explained, it doesn't matter because under either test, in fact, the more stringent, more difficult test was applied by the federal court, and that's the Doyle standard, because it's a but-for standard. Now, if I can just briefly touch on the last issue, and that is, I think, quite significant, and that is that the trial court said, in essence, that it doesn't matter whether or not the business justification reason that is set forth, whether that occurred or not. It's only what did the Board of Education think or believe at that time. And that is a ludicrous result because this court, when it looked at the in part versus the but-for standard, and if you look at the language of the statute, it says that you can discharge if you have just cause unrelated. There must be cause. And the court of law said there must be cause. And there can only be cause if the allegations of misconduct, in fact, did occur. And if you look at the Reitline case, specifically in there, Reitline, when they were talking about it, said that in the situation where the employer alleges business justification and doesn't prove it, they lose. So to say that, in essence, you can have a business justification and say, these are our reasons why. And even though it didn't occur, nonetheless, we're still able to use that. That is a worse standard than Doyle, Mount Healthy, or the but-for test that this court said cannot be justified under 417.
Thank you, Mr. Foley. Mr. Compton, 30 seconds.
Justice, very briefly, Mr. Foley indicated that the jury had to decide that there was anti-union animus. Again, I would ask the court to recall and focus on the fact that we have two separate sets of circumstances. CERB did acknowledge that in the federal case there was a decision. CERB indicated in its decision on the remand applying Adena that addressed constitutional issues. Freedom of speech was one of the allegations in the complaint. So, Your Honor,
in your view, CERB determined it's not the same issue. They didn't determine that we don't have to consider it And we wouldn't be bound if it was the same issue. They determined it's not the same issue.
Your Honor, at the end of a very lengthy and involved decision by CERB that addressed the procedural issue, it in fact acknowledged that there was a decision by the federal court, and it said that those were based upon the context within which that award occurred was a constitutional issue, not an unfair labor practice. And to jump and say that that decision, that jury verdict, says it's an anti-union animus, is inappropriate. We don't know what the jury decided upon, and we will never know why that jury made that award.
Thank you, Mr. Compton. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion. We'll take a brief recess.
All rise.